From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall in for David Gustina. Coming up on the show, are mounting corruption scandals among state lawmakers showing an increased need for ethics reform? Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on major infrastructure projects undertaken in the state lately, including the rebuilding of LaGuardia Airport. And we'll take a look at the aftermath of the prison escape that captivated the state. Those stories and more coming up on the Legislative Gazette. The New York State Health Department this week announced the winners of five medical marijuana licenses, winnowing a field of more than 40 applicants. Empire State Health Solutions will manufacture the drug in Fulton County and distribute in Albany and Westchester counties. Attain will manufacture in Warren County and distribute in Albany, Ulster, Westchester, and Onondaga counties. Other licensed applicants include PharmaCann, Columbia Care NY, and Bloomfield Industries. New York's medical marijuana law allows organizations to operate up to four dispensaries spread throughout the state. Registered doctors will be able to prescribe medical marijuana to patients with conditions that include cancer, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, and HIV/AIDS. Two more lawmakers, a former Senate leader and the deputy majority leader of the Senate, were convicted of corruption in the past week. But Governor Andrew Cuomo continues to say it would not be a good idea to call state lawmakers back to the Capitol to enact more ethics reform measures. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Senate Deputy Majority Leader Tom Libous was convicted of lying to the FBI over getting a job for his son in a politically connected law firm. Former Senate Leader John Sampson was found guilty of running a foreclosure embezzlement scheme. Both immediately lost their Senate seat. The convictions come in a year that's seen the arrests and resignations of both majority party leaders. The government reform group Citizens Union, which has taken to running a corruption tracker on its website, will now have to add two more names to the dozens of lawmakers convicted of crimes over the past decade and a half. The group's Dick Dady says that number is now at 31.
It's just shocking that this crime wave of corruption has continued in Albany and has actually accelerated because in the last 3 years alone, 11 of those 31 that have left office has happened in the last 3 years.
Citizens Union is one of a coalition of groups asking Governor Cuomo to call a special session of the legislature this summer to focus on reform. But Cuomo says it would be a waste of the taxpayers' money. He says he tried to get lawmakers to pass more ethics reform in the recently concluded legislative session, but was not successful.
I haven't heard anything from the Senate or the Assembly saying our minds have changed. We now want to pass a bill that we didn't want to pass. So for the taxpayers to spend a lot of money to bring the legislators back to Albany for the same outcome they had several weeks ago makes no sense.
The governor says he and the Senate and Assembly have already passed numerous ethics reforms, including greater disclosure of lawmakers' outside income.
And we have the highest ethical standards this state has ever had. That is not going to stop people from doing stupid or criminal things, as we've learned.
Critics, including the state's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, say many of the ethics reforms have done little more than tinker around the edges. Dady, with Citizens Union, says if Cuomo does not use his powers to try to steer the legislature toward more comprehensive reform, then he risks being seen as part of the problem.
By saying that we shouldn't hold a special session because we cannot expect a different outcome, it's disappointing because we need to have a different outcome. And the only way we're going to get a different outcome is if the governor starts to force the hand of the legislature by holding a special session and putting their feet to the fire and saying, you've got to do it.
In some ways, the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, has effectively cleaned up some of Albany's potential for corruption through the arrests and convictions of several lawmakers. Many have been accused of manipulating their employment outside the legislature for personal gain. The three current major leaders of the legislature all say they will no longer earn any outside income. Dady says that's a start, but falls far short of what's needed.
This is voluntary. This is not statute. Things can happen, things can change, and that's why we need an ethics law that addresses this issue.
Citizens Union advocates giving all lawmakers a significant pay raise, then strictly limiting outside income, as is currently done in Congress. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A veteran lawmaker from Syracuse has been named Deputy Majority Leader of the New York State Senate to replace former Senator Tom Libous. Republican Senator John DeFrancisco's new position was announced Thursday by Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan. The 68-year-old DeFrancisco is an attorney and was first elected in 1992. He leads the powerful Senate Finance Committee. Earlier this year, DeFrancisco lost a bid for Senate Majority Leader to Flanagan. Previous Senate Leader Dean Skelos resigned his leadership position in May after he was arrested on corruption charges. And now our political observer, Alan Shartok, weighs in, speaking to the Legislative Gazette's Ian Pickus.
It's the Legislative Gazette, and joining us is our political observer, Dr. Alan Shartok. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, Ian, and thanks for stepping in for David this week.
This was a week when the vice president came to New York State, Joe Biden joining Governor Andrew Cuomo to talk about a massive photonics project in Rochester, and also the rebuilding of LaGuardia Airport in New York City.
You know, Ian, I've been thinking about this a great deal. What we have here is a case of the edifice complex as established by Governor Nelson Rockefeller. He just kept building things. And when you build things, you get a lot of credit. Now, there's something to be said for a governor who comes up with, let's build a LaGuardia Airport, let's redo it, let's build a bridge, which we still don't have the idea about where the money is coming from. But, you know, in the end, it's like buying a house. You get a mortgage, you pay the mortgage off for the next 40 years, 30 years. In this case, when you're an elected official, somebody else is going to have to pay that mortgage. So you build, you get a tremendous amount of credit for it. It's a very brilliant strategy. You get a tremendous amount of credit. We needed a new LaGuardia Airport. We needed a new bridge. The old bridge was going into the river. And yet the financing is going to be problematic. But again, once again, the brilliance of the strategy is somebody else is going to have to pay that. You won't be governor when all of that money has to come up.
Speaking of the governor, word this week that he has, if not mended fences, at least reopened the lines of communication with his counterpart, the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. The two had been trading barbs in the press as the session came to an end here in Albany.
Well, most people think that Cuomo was the pusher of this fight. And nobody could quite understand it because he kept saying that de Blasio was a good friend of his. And de Blasio said the same thing. And yet every time the governor gave a slap to de Blasio and de Blasio turned the other cheek, people would wonder. Finally, whoever the political strategist in his camp was said, you got to cut it out. He fought back. He made it clear that Cuomo, in his estimation, was a bully. And he began to get some good results as a result of that. So now they have this conversation on the telephone. And when they get off, de Blasio says it hasn't been resolved. Meaning he now sees himself as the guy who is controlling the reins of the fight, to mix metaphors. I suspect Cuomo must be realizing that, you know, it's better to play well in the sandbox than to always just be pushing everybody else around.
Speaking of the sandbox, in recent days, two New York State senators, formerly members of the leadership, were stripped of their seats and convicted on separate crimes. John Sampson and Tom Libous, one Democrat, one Republican, leading the good government groups to call for a special session to deal with ethics. It doesn't seem like much is happening on that front.
Well, you know, Ian, I have to tell you, I've been around a long time. I've been watching the legislature for a long time. I've been talking about it on the radio. I've been talking about it on the television. I've been writing columns about it. You would think that as the long arm of Preet Bharara reaches into this cesspool, I hope a glove is on, and decides that he's going to go after these people, that they should see that there is not a good way to do this except to really reform things. The goo-goo or good government groups are right to call for a special session, but they're not going to do that. Look, Let's just say you got a real estate firm or a law firm and you're making a lot of money as a result of this. You live in a nice place and all. Now along come those people who say, live on the $100,000 a year you make, give or take a few dollars. And you say, no, I can't. I won't. But in the meantime, what would you rather do? Go to jail?
Also this week, Governor Cuomo and the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, who has new powers to investigate police killings of unarmed civilians, met with members of the clergy and the community. The governor saying he has full confidence in the Attorney General to take a look at this issue, which has really taken on some national import.
Well, speaking of not getting along in the sandbox, for years everybody knew that Cuomo was rough on Eric Schneiderman. Schneiderman asked for this power a long time ago, didn't get it. Meantime, we had David Soares, the district attorney in here, says he doesn't understand how it's going to work. If something happens in a community, who does the investigation? What he says Schneiderman wants to do is deputize the very people he took the power away from to do these investigations. Doesn't make a lot of sense. But Cuomo, for whatever reason, has decided to mend this particular fence with this one servant of the people, Eric Schneiderman, and to give him the power. But let's just see whether Schneiderman can go into these localities in every case and do the investigations that are needed. Soares seems to think that he's been cut off at the knees.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York state government and politics, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Vice President Joe Biden was in Rochester this week to announce a major investment in the region, the Innovation Trails. Veronica Volk reports that the government is putting millions of dollars toward photonics research in a program that also involves SUNY Poly in Albany.
A $110 million federal grant will be matched with $500 million in public and private investments in order to create a photonics research and manufacturing hub in Rochester. Photonics is the use of light in technology. It's fast, efficient, and used in telecommunications, medical imaging, and national defense. Politicians and business owners have high hopes for the institute. It's expected to create 6,000 jobs and reverse the perceived brain drain that affects the region. Vice President Biden says making Rochester a photonics hub has implications that extend far beyond the region.
And it's not going to only affect Rochester and the state of New York and the United States of America, it's going to affect the whole world. This is one of the most promising areas we could move into. And I can think of no more promising place to do it than here in Rochester.
But besides furthering scientific knowledge, Biden says this is also an important step in the future of American manufacturing towards what he calls insourcing, meaning it will create and attract jobs here in the U.S. instead of overseas. In Rochester, I'm Veronica Volk for the Innovation Trail.
Former Clinton correctional employee Joyce Mitchell pleaded guilty during her arraignment in Plattsburgh this week on charges related to her role in aiding the escape of Richard Matt and David Sweat from the maximum security prison in Dannemora. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was at the Clinton County Government Center for the proceedings.
The 51-year-old Mitchell pleaded guilty to promoting prison contraband, first degree, and criminal facilitating in the fourth degree. She is accused of knowingly and unlawfully bringing contraband, including hacksaw blades, chisels, a punch tool, and a screwdriver, to Richard Matt and David Sweat while they were inmates at the Dannemora prison. She is also charged with intentionally rendering them aid that provided the means for their escape, which set off a 23-day manhunt in June. In the end, Matt was shot and killed by police and Sweat was wounded before being taken into custody. In court Tuesday morning, Mitchell agreed to a plea agreement and waived her right to have the charges presented to a grand jury. Judge Kevin Ryan asked her a series of questions to assure she understood the charges and the plea agreement. She quietly answered each query, and as she was escorted from the courtroom, it was evident that she had been crying. Following the session, Clinton County District Attorney Andrew Wiley said there is overwhelming evidence of her guilt.
The people were confident that the two charges within the Superior Court information were charges that would be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And in the interest of justice, I negotiated a plea and recommended sentence that was placed on the record today. Because the evidence was so overwhelming, Ms. Mitchell has acknowledged her guilt, obviously, by appearing in court and entering a plea. She wanted to expedite her case proceedings and move on.
Mitchell could have faced other charges, including promoting prison contraband, conspiracy to commit the murder of her husband, and charges related to sexual relations with Sweat and Matt. The district attorney says under the plea deal, Mitchell avoids those charges. Mitchell's lawyer, Stephen Johnston, advised her to accept the plea agreement because the evidence is so overwhelming and he feared the additional charges. He describes Mitchell as anxious, depressed, and remorseful.
She got in over her head into something that she never should have started, but she did, and she's paying the price now, but she realizes that she made a horrible mistake. Matt got her to feeling good about herself, better than she had for a period of time, and she was swept off her feet a bit. And then when she realized who she was dealing with, everything changed.
Under the deal, Mitchell waives her right to trial and must cooperate with the Inspector General's investigation at the Clinton Correctional Facility. There are still two pending court proceedings related to the escape from Dannemora. Wiley says the investigation into charges against corrections officer Gene Palmer is continuing. Grand jury proceedings were delayed to allow his attorney to review the case.
Plea negotiations with Palmer's attorney have failed, and Palmer's attorney has advised us in writing that Palmer will not waive his right to grand jury and that the case will be presented in early August to a Clinton County grand jury. In regards to charges pending against David Sweat of escape in the first degree, a delay in the grand jury presentment was caused by the Inspector General's investigation, as well as the investigation being conducted by the Franklin County District Attorney's Office. We will also present this case in early August.
Mitchell is due back in court September 28th for sentencing. She faces 2 1/3 to 7 years in prison.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has been stumping for federal legislation to address sexual assault on college campuses for more than a year. She testified this week at a Senate hearing on the matter, and she held a conference call beforehand to preview her testimony. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Gillibrand has been at the forefront of a nationwide effort to combat campus sexual assault and violence. Leading an expanded coalition of 16 bipartisan senators, Gillibrand has reintroduced a strengthened version of her legislation, which she claims would require accountability and transparency from higher education institutions. The bill is called the Campus Accountability and Safety Act.
Study after study shows that up to 1 in 5 women will experience unwanted sexual contact before they graduate from college. Meanwhile, two-thirds of students who were found responsible for sexual assault are still on their college campuses.
In the past, Gillibrand has also cited statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, showing approximately 19% of undergraduate women have been the victims of sexual assault. With campuses across the country under the microscope, Skidmore College was just one local college to update its sexual misconduct policy, which it did last August. Spokeswoman Andrea Wise said the safety of its students is the college's top priority.
This is a very serious issue that affects organizations throughout our country, and including colleges and universities, and Skidmore is not immune from that. We do take this matter very seriously, and we are devoted to combating instances of sexual and gender-based misconduct on our campus.
Gillibrand has beat the drum on this issue through many legislative ups and downs. The Democrat insists college administrators must be held accountable.
Too many schools just hide it under the rug. For example, when there was a survey asking schools, have you reported any sexual assaults in the last 5 years, 40% said they hadn't reported any, which doesn't mean there weren't any. It just means they don't have a reporting structure that's working.
University at Albany spokesman Carl Lunta says the school continues to proactively develop resources to assist and support all victims of sexual or relationship violence.
Through our Advocacy Center for Sexual Violence and numerous campus resources, and through training of staff and first responders and students, we are committed to providing a safe environment in which all our members are treated with dignity and respect. UAlbany takes the strongest possible stand against sexual violence in all forms.
Earlier this year, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo asked private colleges and universities to adopt uniform assault reporting procedures. The word spread on social media, employing the hashtag Enough is Enough. And pop star Lady Gaga joined Cuomo's push for a set campus rape policy. Gillibrand says there were 385 forcible sex offenses reported on New York campuses in 2013, according to the U.S. Department of Education.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
With this week's Legislative Notebook, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. New York State is giving low-cost electricity to 15 businesses around the state as part of a program to use affordable power as an economic development tool. Governor Andrew Cuomo's office announced the newest winners of the Recharge New York initiative on Thursday. The list of businesses includes Amazon in New York City and Bausch & Lomb in Rochester. Other companies are in the Mohawk Valley, the Southern Tier, Long Island, and Western New York. The companies announced have promised to retain more than 1,600 jobs and create more than 730 new jobs. New York State environmental officials say they're streamlining the process for buying hunting licenses. Licenses for the 2015-2016 hunting and trapping seasons go on sale starting August 10th. The Department of Environmental Conservation says new user interfaces make selling licenses by agents and purchases by online customers easier. There are about 1,300 license-issuing agents around the state. New York auditors say an upstate village made ransom payments of $300 and $500 last year to keep its computers running after two official-looking emails released malware throughout its system. The comptroller's office, which has audited 100 municipal computer systems in the past 3 years, says Ilion's experience should warn others. Auditors say the first email attachment converted all data stored in the village system into an unreadable encrypted format. Ilion Village officials have endorsed new security steps. And that's this week's Legislative Notebook. And that does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. A copy of this episode is available online at WAMC.org or by calling 1-800-323-9262. Again, that's 1-800-323-9262. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.